Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituary, Courtney Dwayne Hartman, Odessa, Texas. Odessa, Texas. Courtney Dwayne Hartman was born October 10, 1978, in his beloved hometown of Montgomery, Alabama. Courtney was preceded in death by his grandfather and grandmother, John Davis Bay Hartman Sr., and Dolores Streedy Hartman. He leaves loving memories and an admirable legacy to be cherished by two beautiful children, Derek Big Dog Hartman and Skylar Pooh Hartman, Calera, Alabama. A devoted mother, Cloydetta Lisa Hartman, admiring siblings, Derek Red Alfraganda Hartman and Chantel Mook Hartman, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Loving aunts and uncles, Rodney Streedy, Angela T. Danny Hall, Auburn, Alabama, John Jr. D. Hartman Jr., Chanita Bug Hartman, Arthurin Hill, San Antonio, Texas, and Thomas Maxine Streedy. Adoring cousins, Christy Moon Hall, Atlanta, Georgia, John Big Country D. Hartman, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Jalon Chunk Brown, and Jordan Toot Hartman, and a host of extended family, friends, neighbors, and colleagues. The family held Courtney's funeral service on May 7th at Maggie Street Missionary Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. Pastor Ezekiel Petway, Sr., Senior Pastor, and Pastor Monte D. Maddox, officiating. Courtney's many, many friends and family, including his mother, children, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins, were in attendance. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, May 14th, in Odessa at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Courtney's friends and co-workers in the Permian Basin are invited. Death Notices. Darla B. Schwartz, Frisco. Darla B. Schwartz, 86, of Frisco, died Sunday, May 7th, 2022, in Frisco. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, May 14th, 2022, at American Heritage. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage of Midland. Melissa Jill Hodges Steen, Monahans. Melissa Jill Hodges Steen, 62, of Odessa, of Monahans, died Tuesday, May 10th, 2022, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, May 13th, 2022, at Ward County Event Center. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Larry Virgil Stinnett, Odessa. Larry Virgil Stinnett, 71, of Odessa, died Sunday, May 9th, 2022, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage of Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, May 9th. Building for the Future, Pecos Barstow Toya ISD Moving on Bonds, Teacher Incentives. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Pecos Barstow Toya ISD is a bustling place right now. They have six different construction projects going on, financed by a $178 million bond passed last May. Two elementary schools, a maintenance, child nutrition and technology facility, and a new career and technical education center for the high school are also in the works. The maintenance, child nutrition, support, alternative education and technology facility will be named after Johnny V. Mata, a fallen soldier in the Iraq War. Chief Academic Officer Karen Mott said that the building will be open in August. The new elementary schools will replace Bessie Haynes and Austin Elementary Schools. With the two new campuses, they will consolidate to four. Currently, there is a pre-kindergarten and kindergarten campus and an elementary campus that houses first through third, and another campus that has fourth and fifth grade, Communications Officer Nadia Natividad said. Superintendent Brent Hako said the CTE facility will enclose 60,000 to 70,000 square feet and have state-of-the-art career and technology spaces for students. A stadium and staff housing is being built with fund balance, district reserve funds. HACO started at Pecos Barstow Toya in July 2020. A couple of months later, they started on a long-range plan and hired an architecture team in October 2020 to take a deep dive into the condition of the district's facilities. A stakeholder steering committee was formed in December 2020. Quote, "Those meetings continued into January of 21," HACO said. In February 2021, the committee presented a bond package to the board, and the board approved it. The bond passed in May 2021. The total tax rate is now $1.06 per $100 valuation. It was $1.05. The steering committee recommended going up 1 cent, HACO said. When he arrived in Pecos, HACO said the district had needs in several areas. Quote, "One of those areas was facilities. The average age of our facilities was about 65 years old. Our current high school is about 72 years old. We know that students learn differently than they did 40, 50, 60-plus years ago, and we needed to build new facilities, not only to support student learning, but also the older facilities will become a burden to the taxpayers in the sense that it becomes much harder for upkeep," HACO said. He added that it also becomes more costly in the long run. The district also reconfigured grades, so there will be a pre-K 4 to first grade and a second through fifth grade school. The reason, he said, is because the less students have to transition through school, the better they typically do. Quote, "We wanted to limit the transition, but we also wanted to be strategic about transitions, and so we look at the grades pre-K 4, although we do some work with pre-K 3. But pre-K 4 through first grade, that age range is your learning how to read, so it's good to group those kids together," HACO said. Second through fifth grade is still an elementary age, but they're really starting to take reading and apply it differently, so they're reading to learn a little bit more as opposed to learning how to read, he added. The junior high won't change. It will still have grades 6 to 8, and the high school will still have grades 9 through 12. When you are able to raise your tax rate by just a penny, HACO said, it makes good economic sense for the taxpayers. Quote, "When you think about that bond and our tax base here in Pecos, a little more than 95% of our tax base comes from oil and gas and minerals, so really the majority of the bond is being paid for by oil and gas and not by rooftops," he said. The district has 2,675 students and about 250 teachers, and it is expected to grow based on demographic predictions. Quote, "It's been at least 40 years since they built a school. We're excited about it. We have a lot of work going on behind the scenes. We have 6 different construction projects going on right now. 2 of those are brand new elementary schools. Those schools are slated to be ready by August of 2023, so we're excited for that time period to come and 23-24 school year to start so we can open up those new facilities and let the kids experience what modern school learning is about," HACO said. The contractor is BTC Construction in El Paso, and the architects are VLK Architects. Met said all the buildings have portables. With the new construction, she said they won't need them. She added that the grid reconfiguration is a game changer. When the district's buildings were constructed, learning was different. Students sat at their desks in their rows, and the teacher taught. Quote, "We know that our students now use technology to learn. our old facilities weren't built for Wi-Fi, and they weren't built to charge devices. They weren't built for small group instruction and the intervention classrooms, so that has totally changed. They have these new collaborative spaces and some flexible places, bigger libraries that can hold the amount of books that we know our kids need to be able to have access to, so total game changer for students, Matt said. Quote, "It's a game changer for teachers, and it really just changes the way that they get to go about their job and help students," Matt added. Matt noted that the buildings will be constructed without learning being interrupted. Another step officials are taking to improve the district is one-time hiring stipends for teachers. Assistant Superintendent of Organizational Management, Kara Malone, said the district has less than 20 openings. There are incentives based on timing, teaching special education, English as a second language, bilingual and math, and certified teachers who graduated from Pecos High School. There is also a relocation stipend. Special education teachers can be eligible for an extra $2,000 stipend right now, Malone said. Quote, "So we have a $2,000 stipend if you signed on by May 1st, a $1,000 by June 1st, and they do have to be certified teachers. That's really the main stipulation. They have to have all those credentials completed before they start the year," Malone said. Malone has worked in several districts. Most recently, she came from Alamogordo, New Mexico, but she was in Dallas-Fort Worth before that. Malone said she has been making the rounds of job fairs. "We've talked to a lot of really exciting, talented young people that are looking for that perfect place. We're hoping they find that to be Pecos, because we do have a lot to offer, and we do have other stipends, too. We have a relocation stipend, which is for teachers, counselors, and administrators. We'll pay $1,500 for you to relocate if you're an individual, and $2,500 if you're a couple. You have to move to Pecos. It can't just be the area. You have to move to Pecos," Malone said. Quote, "We also have a welcome home stipend if you are a graduate of Pecos High School, knowing that 60% of teachers tend to teach close to where they grew up. We also have a $1,500 stipend for those wanting to go back home," Malone added. She added that the starting salary for teachers is $52,000. The district pays $555 for individual medical insurance. She said she thinks the incentives have helped. "There is also a $500 stipend for people in the district who refer someone to Pecos, and the district ends up signing them if they aren't someone that has already applied." Quote, "I think right now it's a teacher's market. I think we have a lot of schools trying to get a lot of young people, and I think a lot of them are still in the process of trying to decide where they want to go because they do have a lot of options. But it definitely has put us out there as competitive with districts around us, and particularly in the area," Malone said. She added that Pecos is on the move. Quote, "We have a lot of great things happening, from new facilities to a lot of great leadership. What I've been doing the past few weeks at job fairs is really trying to get that information out. I think we provide a tremendous amount of support for new teachers. I think it's really important that teachers think about how to have a great first year, and I think we can help them with that," Malone said. "Another thing that's really important about Pecos, which is why I tell people out of college that they should come here, is that we have a Grow Your Own program. We will pay 100% of tuition for those that are accepted into a program. We have to accept them into our Grow Your Own program, but we'll pay for their tuition, and so it's not a reimbursement, it's not a percentage. It's if you're working on something that will extend your opportunities in education, we will pay for that. There's no debt for you if you stay 3 years here and work on that master's, Malone added. The district partners with different places. We have Grow Your Own for our instructional aides as they work toward teacher certification, and then we have it as we help people get their master's degree, Malone said.
Support local businesses this National Small Business Week. Start with trust. Heather Massey. Massey is Vice President of Communications of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Check out www.bbb.org or call 563-1880. For over 50 years, the U.S. Small Business Administration, SBA, has organized and hosted National Small Business Week, NSBW, during the first week of May. NSBW recognizes and emphasizes the importance of small businesses in the United States and their contributions to its economic well-being, with 32.5 million small businesses employing 61.2 million U.S. employees in 2021. Small businesses make up 99.8% of Texas businesses and employ 45% of the Texas workforce, said Heather Massey, Vice President of Communications for BBB, serving the heart of Texas. They are a key component in the strength of the Texas economy, and the pandemic continues to take a heavy toll on their operations. Unfortunately, small business owners often must overcome multiple challenges for continued success and longevity. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Business Employment Dynamics, the survival rate of small businesses fluctuates significantly in the first 10 years of operation. Approximately 82% of small businesses survive their first year in business. Approximately 55% of small businesses survive their fifth year in business. Approximately 35% of small businesses survive their 10th year in business. To ensure entrepreneurs have every opportunity to succeed in their business venture, the SBA and BBB offer free webinars, training events, and conferences during NSBW and throughout the year. Current and future business owners can attend these events by registering at sba.gov/NSBW and BBB.org. The theme for NSBW 2022 is Building a Better America Through Entrepreneurship, with SBA's 4-day virtual summit beginning on May 2. BBB encourages consumers to shop locally during National Small Business Week to show support for their local business community, said Massey. This NSBW, show appreciation for the small businesses in your community by following these recommendations from your Better Business Bureau. Shop local. Before buying an item from a major corporation, search your community to determine if a local retailer offers the same thing. Instead of purchasing the newest best-selling book or home gadget from a mass retailer or online, support your local community and meet the small business entrepreneurs in your area. Most companies have an option to order online and pick up at the store for even more convenience when shopping local. Go to the source. While there will always be times when delivery is the best option, consumers should try to go directly to the source of purchase. Third-party delivery services charge restaurants fees to use their services, taking away from the profit margins of small businesses. Small businesses listing their products on digital shops, such as Amazon or eBay, may also have a percentage of the sale diverted to the hosting website. By going directly to the source of these products, consumers can support small businesses by removing the middleman. Be social. Support small businesses in your community by liking them on social media, writing positive reviews, posting positive photos, and tagging the company in your posts. Promoting these businesses through social channels has the same effect as word-of-mouth recommendations, enhancing their digital presence. Participate in community events. farmers markets, networking events, community celebrations, and national holiday celebrations are fantastic avenues to support locally owned small businesses, meet your community, and learn what local businesses offer. It is also where ideas, opportunities, and knowledge can be shared, strengthening your small business community. Offer assistance. Be generous and forthcoming with any help you can provide to a small business. If you have technical or skilled expertise, such as an electrician or a lawyer, consider offering your services to small businesses in your community at a discounted rate while they recoup from the disruption caused by the pandemic. If you see an area where a small business is struggling that you are knowledgeable of, offer recommendations and build mutually beneficial relationships. Better Business Bureau hosts a resource center specifically tailored to the needs of small businesses across North America. Consumers can access these resources for free at bbb.org/small-business. The SBA offers various resources for small businesses to assist in planning, execution, and evaluation of business practices, such as small business development centers. To find an SBA resource near you, visit sba.gov/local-assistance. Small business entrepreneurs must remain vigilant against scams that specifically target their business. Visit bbb.org for more information about common scams that target small businesses.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Reaction to sulfa drug made his life miserable. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 78-year-old male in fairly good health. I recently was prescribed Bactrim, a sulfa drug, for an ear infection, but didn't know I am allergic to sulfa. I had a severe reaction to the drug, a raging, very itchy rash on most of my body. It made my life miserable. I was given prednisone, which did not help a great deal. I was also given hydroxyzine and triamcinolone ointment, which helped somewhat. I had this condition for 3 months before the rash and itch subsided. Since this episode, I have talked to many people who have had either a reaction to sulfa or know someone who has. Why do doctors continue to prescribe sulfa drugs when there seems to be such a high probability that there will be a reaction? Why hasn't a test been developed to determine if a person has this allergy before prescribing it? Answer. All antibiotics share the risk of allergic reactions, some more than others. About 8% of people are allergic to sulfa drugs, with women being twice as likely. In most cases, the reaction is a rash that begins after 3 days or so on the antibiotic and goes away promptly when the drug is discontinued. However, there is another notable reaction that usually begins a week or two after starting the medicine and lasts for weeks. This type of reaction can be very serious, with some people developing multiple organ involvement. There are still other types of allergic reactions to sulfa drugs, which can also be serious, even fatal. Fortunately, most of the 8% of people will have the least dangerous form of allergy. Attempts to create a test to predict or even confirm a sulfa allergy have not been successful, and none is available. Doctors need to have a healthy respect for sulfa allergies and prescribe these medicines only when the benefit would outweigh the risk.
Woman's long-held opinion of brother-in-law comes out. Dear Abby, my sister and I have always been close. She is married to a man I have always thought is domineering and arrogant. I also suspect that he's emotionally abusive from things she has confided over the years. These include days of the silent treatment, refusing to celebrate her birthday because he doesn't believe in it, and discouraging her from taking a job she was interested in. He refuses to go to counseling and says whatever problems there are between them are her fault. I hold my tongue and try to tolerate him because she has chosen to stay with him. He recently participated in a marathon and was connected to us and many others through social media so we could follow the entire two-day event from start to finish. After a day of constant dinging on my phone, I found his need for attention over the top and stopped following. My sister was very upset about it. She said she was embarrassed and hurt. When she asked why I stopped, I told her the truth. Now our relationship is damaged. I apologized and tried to smooth things over, but she's now fully aware of my true feelings about him after seeing and hearing how he has treated her over the years. Should I have kept the peace, as my dear departed mother always said, and continue to keep my mouth shut, or should I have been honest about my feelings? Protective of Sis. Dear Protective, because you say you and your sister are close, I'm surprised you held your tongue about her husband's behavior for so long. You did nothing wrong by tuning out of the marathon updates. You should not have been expected to be held hostage for 2 days because your brother-in-law's ego needed bolstering. You were honest with your sister and, in my opinion, did nothing that requires an apology. Dear Abby, my partner and I have been in a long-distance relationship for about a year. After I did some casual social media stalking, I learned he still lives with his ex-boyfriend, in spite of the fact that he continually complains to me about his roommate, whom he never refers to by name. On top of that, we made a commitment over the last year to phone each other at least once a day. For the past 3 weeks, there are times I haven't heard from him at all, despite seeing him active on social media, especially on weekends. It's to a point where I stay awake until all hours, hoping to hear from him. Should I approach him about this, or is this just the end to the honeymoon phase? Waiting by the phone in Canada. Dear Waiting, not only is it the end of the honeymoon phase, but it may also be the beginning of the end of this romance, because it appears your partner isn't as eager to contact you as you are to hear from him. Long-distance relationships can be challenging, and you may be happier if you couple up with somebody local.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.